I thought we'd reach the end of the year last week, but some conversations just don't let you close the book that neatly. If you watch State of the Nation, you know Mike Sham spends his time asking uncomfortable questions without theatrics and without illusions. So, for the final show of 2025, this isn't about hot takes. It's about whether this year has stripped away illusion and whether what's left makes us cynical or simply clear-eyed about the state of our nation. I'm so happy to have you here. I really am. And I promise I'm coming to the State of the Nation. Fantastic. After the State of the Nation next year.
Perfect.
But here we are, 18 months into what, at the time, everybody said seismic, shift in the tectonic plates that make up our democracy.
Mm.
Are you more hopeful or more cynical in the past 18 months?
I'm both.
We?
Both. I'm more hopeful because for the first time since in the preceding 30 years, we've got the country speaking to each other. Whereas if you go roughly from the time Thabo Mbeki sort of put up his wall, where he wouldn't hear anybody else but Thabo Mbeki. Subsequent to that, you've got two parts of the country that just weren't speaking to each other. So it's a good thing that they're speaking to each other. But I'm not sure that everybody has accepted the new reality. For example, I really don't think that there is a political party out there of the significant players that understand how those tectonic plates have shifted. They think they can put them back together again, and they can't. So that either gets put together better than what they were before or a lot worse. So I'm very hopeful because we are not making as many bad decisions as before. But where I'm concerned is that have the lessons really been learned?
Mm-hmm.
From what the voters said in the middle of last year.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot because one of the things that is dominating and interesting that you say talking to each other, one of the things that have been dominating the news cycle and therefore every conversation and the psyche of South Africans, the Madlanga Commission, Kambepe and Gabinde. And I really would like to hear your thoughts on each one of those. And maybe we should start with the latest one, which has been quite interesting to watch the developments over the past week and a half. And that's what started out with Shamila Patoyi asking, begging for this inquiry to happen into the fitness to hold office and has degenerated into a shambles of Shamila. What have you been doing, girl?
Yeah.
What do you make of that? What do you make of this circus?
I think that it really is, to me, a sad story of one person ill-suited for the time. And that happens.
Wow.
I think that she may have had a record somewhere. I actually first became aware of her when she was a prosecution of the Antikronia scandal, right, all those years ago. And she was great and feisty and we were all those that remembered her great performance then. And then she went overseas and you'd imagine she did quite well.
Mm.
And
because she went to The Hague.
She went to The Hague and we even though we couldn't overly track her progress there, you would have thought she would have come back and really been the person for the moment.
Mm.
Instead, she turned into a sniveling crybaby with no stomach for the fight.
Mm.
And I think the problem was that she didn't know she was in a fight. And there's nothing worse than somebody who's in a fight, but they don't know it. And she just seems to have no mechanism to deal with the fight.
Mm.
Because I think she's been used to being in environments that where somebody in a position like hers was supported, not actively undermined by her superior.
Do you think she was undermined? Do you think Cyril was not on her side? So he appointed her and then
yeah,
not wanting her to do anything.
And I do sort of my sort of basis for saying that is that he Cyril Ramaphosa, since he became president, has done nothing to enhance the criminal justice system that was hollowed out by Jacob Zuma. He has done nothing to hold anybody to account that was found guilty of anything. The only person he ever fired was Andrew Whitfield, and that was hardly a crime. But some of those other criminals that are sitting there, people like David Mahlobo and Mamoloko Kubai, has got a big question to answer. Nchaveni. Kumbutso Nchaveni has got a very, very serious case to answer. There is no question about it. Then you get to something like Thembi Simelane, which is almost an open and shut case, and he still can't act. So I'm saying this is hardly a president that's committed to justice. Mm. So I would hardly imagine that he's sitting behind saying, go Shamila, arrest people, when he won't even, where he appoints those people.
And as I've been watching it, my cards on the table was never convinced that she was going to do anything interesting or spectacular, because I don't think it's why she was appointed. But watching particularly what even became an adversarial exchange with her and an advocate in Ngugay Dobie, there has been almost a gutting open of exactly how inept she has been.
Yeah. And how sad and resigned she looks and behaves.
Sad?
Yeah.
I thought she was...
It just looks like somebody wants
very arrogant on that stand. Yeah,
very arrogant, but she really does look like somebody wants to just leave the room. Yeah.
Well, she did.
And she did. So, it's the first brave thing I've ever seen her do, was actually just walking out of the room in the way she did it. If she had shown a little bit of stomach for the fight when she was in the job, maybe it would have been different. But... she's a non-event. The best thing I could say about her is that at least it doesn't look like she was promoting crime like some of her predecessors.
Mm.
But she certainly hasn't done anything about it other than complain.
So she walks out,
yes.
Refuses to answer questions. And an interesting reference that was made by Ngugay Dobie to that absconsion, as he called it, is that when another high-profile person absconded from... an inquiry of same nature, there was dire consequences. Do you think there'll be dire consequences for her?
I think they're going to try and, obviously we're referring to Jacob Zuma, contempt of court following the
Zondo Commission walkout.
And there's absolute similarities. I could not believe what I saw. I'm not the person who's easily shocked, but for her to say, sorry, I've got to go and get legal advice, I'm just not coming back, and everybody sort of imploring her, saying, you just can't do that, was quite odd. But there's got to be repercussions. But this is not a repercussions country, is it?
Well, I was going to ask you about that. If you think that South Africans experience these processes as some form of clarity or airing out of what has happened towards hopefully holding someone accountable, or they just see it as entertainment and are on to the next commission when it comes?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think we've South Africans need to be re-educated just as a whole. Nobody's going to burn down anything because Shamila Batoi gets arrested or whatever happens. So there's no real theatre in this other than this particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help thinking that all that comes of this is we just say, please God, let her go. She's going in a month's time or so.
Mm-hmm.
Let her go. Let Menzi Simelane replace her. That is a joke, everybody who's listening. Menzi Simelane could be he's the guy responsible for gutting the criminal justice system and the
ANC. Well,
he's
the reason we're here.
As one of the potential successors to Shamila Batoi.
And so I'm also, you talk about theatrics and the theater and drama of it all. Another commission that today or tomorrow, I think, will have its interim report.
Yes.
We're now used to the reports, Madlanga Commission, which started with quite a lot of theatrics with that very dramatic press conference by the KZN Police Commissioner, General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi. And what we have heard during the course of the 3 months that they have sat and listened to testimony has been astounding for me, really. And I think I understand how gutted our criminal justice system has been. But I don't think I had quite as clear an indication of what kind of criminality has been going on there. And then to watch the theater of the Senzo Mkhulu, of the, you know, coming and going. Do you think as South Africans, we're okay? So then the report comes out, nothing happens. Senzo is still in the NEC. He, you know, he's on fully paid special leave.
I call him the Minister of Netflix. What else is he doing?
What do you think? Because we spoke about cynicism. Besides outrage, what should South Africans be thinking, saying, doing at this point to hold some kind of somebody accountable in one way or another?
Look, I think in South Africa we've become so used to lowering our expectations when it comes to the state acting in our interests, because remember, we pay for this lot, but we've, you know, we have no expectations of them doing the right thing. What concerns me about the commissions, especially the Madlanga Commission, well, the parliamentary is kind of similar, but there's some different dynamics involved.
Well, and the fact that they just very quickly now we're going to do this thing because there's a commission coming.
Seem to be doing something, what worries me was this real focus on minor, in the scheme of things, criminality. And I'm not trying to minimize because people have died, people's lives have been destroyed, etc. But, yeah, that kind of like flat-out focus on the mess that is Ekurhuleni. Brought to us by, you know, let's not forget the EFF's role. They are in cahoots with the ANC and Ekurhuleni, and we must call out the parties, much like Johannesburg. We must call out the Patriotic Alliance for being in cahoots with what's going on in Johannesburg. But they were very quick to get onto every detail in Ekurhuleni, which says to me, hang on a second, what is going to happen here is this massive inquiry and Julius Mkhwanazi, the bad Mkhwanazi, going to jail, right? But not Mashaazi.
Is he going to go to jail?
Oh, yeah, he'll go to jail because nobody likes him. He's not anybody's mate. He's not friends with the president. You're going to see Kat Matlala pay the price, but not Thangwani Maulutsi, because Maumela. I keep on getting names wrong and getting into trouble here, but Maumela. You know, like, why don't call him onto the stand? Or even Malefe.
They can't fight Maumela except he was seen at a wedding.
Yeah, look, Tuesday. I mean, they found his car, so one presuming he can't go anywhere in his Lamborghinis. But the point is that they seem to have their lower level victims, or perpetrators that they are going to act against. So Matlala will end up going to jail. Julius Mkhwanazi will go to jail and maybe a few other people. But clearly there were political superiors that were providing cover for them and nothing will happen to them.
Do you think these are just distractions?
I think it's sort of throwing us a bone, you know, in South Africa. We'll do something. So here we go. You see, we did this inquiry. Okay, there you go. Now let's get on. Let's look forward. It's not going to help to look backwards. South Africa's our great appetite for dialogue and moving forward is also a bit of a downfall. Not a bit, it's a massive downfall. The fact of the matter is, you know, some people did bring up the fact of the TRC. It was a long, arduous, messy process. And then you just put that in a big cupboard somewhere and you forget about it. And I hope that soon, in 30 years later, everyone's forgotten. We love that kind of thing. You know, we're amnesty country. So I think that it's too politically messy to clean it up. And, you know, one president hands over to the next president in the hope that he does something about it. And I'm off.
Well, you bring up the TRC and the very big report, which is a good segue to Kampepe, which is about the TRC and all of these delays. Do you think that that is opening up a wound, or it truly is dealing with justice that has been delayed for so long?
I think it's opening. I think that it's too long to call this justice. It's too long, literally. You know, I'm saying that even if you go put that 8-year-old guy in jail who was 50 when we had the TRC, that was justice. To put the guy in jail when he's 80, you know, it's like catching people that were responsible for the Holocaust 50 years later.
Mm.
I don't think those victims feel much better, you know. So I think that it's just a show of we're doing something, but I don't think that that it was done. Of course, the biggest issue with the TRC was that there were two sides to it. Everybody forgets the other side.
Mm.
And the reason why it ended up in that truce was that there were some real abuses being done in the name of the struggle.
Mm.
So if you started to put away old white generals, then you also had to put away some comrades that had done some pretty bad things. So it was pretty easy just to say, we'll come back to you and shelve it for 30 years.
Mm.
It was one of those dirty deals.
You know, I don't know if I agree with you about, if I think about the Holocaust experience and Germany hunting people down all the way to Argentina, you know, because I do think that there is a level of closure on both sides that is required. And in fact, because it hadn't been dealt with for so long, has created a festering wound, as it were, for a lot of South Africans and even the young ones who shouldn't have any of this shit to deal with.
Mm.
It has now become a space to rewrite history for a lot of people. You know, I think also with the megaphone that is social media and the way that that has become weaponized, it's been fascinating to watch how history has been revised by a lot of people.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I can speak to history that I lived through. Mm-hmm. And you want to say, guys, it wasn't like that. And if the story must be told in its completeness, I agree with you. It would be great to see something happen. But quite clearly, you know, you're waiting for that point that it almost becomes irrelevant, just on the punishment level. You know, there's a thing, there's that word in South Africa that we try to avoid, which is punishment. You know, and I say that because it's like, I was reading something where somebody said the other day that with regards to the Tembisa Hospital, this was our great sage, Aaron Motsoaledi, shame, God help us, but where he was saying, we're going to recover 90% of the money that was stolen from Tembisa Hospital.
Mm.
To me, that's one part of what needs to happen. But the bigger part is people must go to jail. They must be punished.
Mm.
You know, why don't we talk about it as coldly as that? Because paying the money back won't necessarily stop the next person, but perhaps somebody in jail might stop the next person.
And all the theatrics of an SIU and all its preservation orders, I'm always very fascinated at the SIU. I mean, you talk about Hangwani Maumela, who is somewhere in the ether. And all of that theatrics of the cars, of the kids' toys, of the all of that, but no real consequence.
Yeah.
Punishment. I like the word punishment. I can't help but feel that what is lost in all of this theatrical conversation, all of these commissions, all of this crazy news cycle after news cycle, and wild revelations, that the thing we are not concentrating on enough, which is why I asked if these are just a distraction, is the real problems of our economy not growing, of unemployment, which is degenerated now to hunger, you know, and malnutrition in children in schools, and what that means for a government or administration, the seventh administration that is constituted by this grand coalition of the DA, and the ANC and all the rats and mice, as Justice said on the show a week ago. Do you think Cyril Ramaphosa has very cleverly played a political long game that we did not see coming, and he's about to be the first ANC president after Nelson Mandela to finish his term?
Yeah, maybe he does. And, you know, one of those things, I'm so loath to give credit to people that win a game, right, let's just say, at the cost of the country. I mean, I think that history or some, you know, greater judge will look at somebody like Cyril Ramaphosa a lot less favorably than what he's thinking. You know, I'm not impressed by somebody that spends the whole time working out how to steal money out of your bank account. You know, I listened to that MKMP say to Matlala, "You dress so wonderfully. Please tell young children how they could become as famous and as popular and as rich as you." Like, come on. You know, understand what you're dealing with, yeah. And I think that you know, Cyril Ramaphosa's presidency has to be remembered as an abject failure. I don't think he's been smart that he's managed to keep himself in power. Good for you. You know, one person wins, 60 million lose. I'm not a fan of that, and we must stop thinking that he's won. We must stop sort of treating him like a winner. He's not a winner. He's the ultimate loser. You know, he's been objectively bad as a president with all of those things you said, with sky-high unemployment, with an economy that doesn't grow, with further division in the country. You know, like, what have you won? I'm very, you know, in the game you're playing, which is, you know, only 50 people in parliament are interested in your game. Good for you. You know, so I really have got very little interest in trying to make him out to be any kind of Svengali, some kind of political mastermind.
Mm.
He is just another failed African leader.
Mm.
That's how he must be remembered. You know, and in many ways, he must be remembered worse than some of those African leaders because they had less to squander. Mm. He had a proper economy that he took over. His road was clear as to how you could make this grow, how this could be a better country for everybody, especially the poor, who by definition would benefit the most, right? So this sort of banging on the drum about BEE and so on, like, big deal. How is that going to help the guy, you know, begging at the traffic lights? He's not getting a job tomorrow. Your mate may get 25% of some white company. Mm. How's that going to help the country?
Mm.
So I think we've got to see him, must treat him with the contempt that he deserves, his presidency.
Do you think he's being enabled then by all the parties that have played along to this game?
By joining the Government of National Unity and staying in power. I think that, you know, they you've got to say compared to what?
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of people, and I do know Moletsi Mbeki. I interviewed him and he was sort of like saying, yeah, they're being propped up by the DA, which is true. But what were those options at the time? This goes back to the TRC thing with the apartheid atrocities. At the time, you needed to not make this into roots of a civil war or a problem. So we kind of get that part right, but then we take it too far, you know? So where we sit right now, I'm going to stick by it was the best of the bad options available.
Right? I wanted this to be a reflective conversation on the year that we've had as South Africans and the political landscape of South Africa. And we cannot not have a conversation. You spoke about a widening divide between people in this country. A very clear strategy and communication to the rest of South Africa about a new form, a newly reconstituted form of Afrikaner nationalism in the form of Solidariteit and AfriForum. What do you think is happening there? What is going on with those guys?
I think that soon enough, you know, you always have to – you were talking about – we were having a fun discussion beforehand, and you mentioned off-ramps.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to give people off-ramps, otherwise, you know, to difficult situations. Mm-hmm. And I think the constant victimization of especially sort of – well, white South Africans, but Afrikaners in particular, is not useful. These are – you know, you eventually lead people to doing stupid things because you've left them no mechanism – here. So what's the mechanism for an Afrikaner in South Africa? Can he just be a South African? Well, apparently not. So you kind of want to say...
Wait, apparently? How so? How are they not allowed to just be?
Because let's take the issue of what is being said with something and what is being heard. Mm. This is a thing that I'm very... my boat that I'm on at the moment, right, is... if you take some of the transformative legislation, BEE, employment equity, etc., what you're saying is that what it says on the box is that this is to, you know, to help the country be more inclusive, blah, blah, blah. What's being heard by white South Africans is you are not South African enough. Mm. You are only truly South African if you're a black South African. Right, that's really what it's saying. You can't start and keep your business, but Pumi can start and keep her business.
I'm so glad you started that by what is being said and what is being heard. Mm-hmm. Because on paper, when you look at the growing difference between who is rich and who is poor, when you look at earnings across the races, when you look at who per capita has in the new South Africa benefited more Afrikaner billionaires created in the new South Africa than black ones.
Okay.
More access, even down to a workplace salary, white men in this country still earn almost three times as much as a black man and five times as much as a black woman. So, and on paper, when you look at all of that and you look at who has really gained wealth and who has been offered a grace beyond measure and what is heard, the victimization, I think, is one that is taken much like offense and not given.
Okay, so we've got to be careful with those statistics.
Mm.
So
why?
In South Africa, we use some very, very bad statistics to suit all of our points. Being a smaller part of the population.
Of course.
Right? And being well established in business. And then we're going to get on to my favorite issue, which is the structure of the economy. Lends itself to those that have got shares in those big companies becoming billionaires, which you pump that into the averages of the white population will distort the number upwards. So all of these earning things, we take 10 people, but one of them happens to be a billionaire and we put in our shitty 9 salaries and you divide it by 10, is going to be higher.
Mm.
So I'm saying that is just a magic of maths, if you know what I mean, right? So
absolutely understood, okay. But so, also by absolute numbers.
Yeah, but hang on a sec. Then you've got black earnings with 50% unemployment, which is, I'm going to get to this part in a second, which is largely black, almost solely black, which means that you're going to drag down those average salaries. So that's where those statistics start becoming very dangerous because we are not comparing like with like, okay? And now we have driven what is the option for a white person in South Africa? What are the options? Can they go into government? Not when last I checked. Okay, the only government...
Can they or do they?
Can they?
Of course they can.
Technically they can. Are they? I'm saying it's yeah. We so saw...
The can versus do. The right. Can, the may versus
are you
versus
saying if
do.
I qualify, if I went and applied to be Johannesburg City manager, my... we've seen it with appointments to constitutional court, et cetera, et cetera. The space within the public sector has narrowed dramatically, right? to the point that eventually you start saying it's just not worth even pursuing that route. We know about, and I mean, don't believe me, believe Cyril Ramaphosa. He said it the other day when he said, right?
I don't believe Cyril Ramaphosa as far as I know.
No, that's fine.
But
I'm saying, what are the percentages of whites in the public sector? It's minute. Okay, right? But that's fine.
As they are in the population group too.
Yes, but so 10%. What I'm saying, okay, but now let's understand now, put your white hat on. Imagine you're one of the Wayans brothers and you're making a movie where you put on the white skin, right? So now you can't get into the public sector. You can't really get into the corporate sector unless you happen to be old and on the board. So if you go into the Pick and Pay, you're not going to see too many white people working in the store. Maybe in management, which then – so what I'm saying is that what are you left with? You're left with starting your own business, right, which in a country that desperately needs goods and services and you understand how economics works, there's a good chance you'll do quite well out of it. So now the numbers get distorted more. Do you understand what I mean? I'm saying that you can't
– I hear what you're saying.
You're making some – We're busy making some weird rules that in so many ways will enrich the white population but disempower the white population at the same time. So it's kind of like this weird situation that is solving itself in a terrible way, and that is it's solving itself through mass immigration of young white people.
I would say to you that the statistic of young people, black and white, leaving this country is astounding.
Yes.
Okay? And that is a function of an economy that is stagnant. So, you know, we've had people on the show having a conversation, and a really dear friend of mine who's recently moved to the UK, who, when he arrived in London, was able to create a network of over 200 young black professionals. Right. So, that's a function of an economy that's completely fucked.
Now, I would love to interrogate that more, because I've just, as you know, come back from a function, a wedding of a young person who's a very close friend of my daughter's, and these are super-duper stars. All of them have left. I was in a room of 150 people, of which only the old people were living in South Africa. Everybody else comes out here for the weddings. They're all highly qualified, and they're across the color chart, right? This was really a Castle Lager commercial, if you go into that place. So you got to say to yourself, if ever we needed proof, here you got the best of the best. You created laws to work supposedly in their favor, and they're choosing to go to a place where they do not have those advantages. Therefore, you've got to say to yourself, well, does that advantage help when our best people are going to places where they don't have that advantage? So clearly it's another, to me, probably the biggest talking point that we are not talking about within some of our crazy business legislation.
No, and you mentioned Mwele Tsimbeki, who's very vocal about why there needs to be a change to a lot of this legislation. But I do want us to circle back to where we started and the off-ramp for this impression that has been created in the minds of a very small part of our country that has distorted what this country is and is about for the rest of the world.
Yeah, I would like to say that, we've got to get onto the G20 at some point. I think that, to me, what have they said that is factually incorrect? They weren't the ones that spoke about the genocide. In fact, you have the bizarre, disgusting spectacle of our president sitting in the White House, right?
Say that again, please. They were not the ones slaughtered in this country.
They were the ones talking about murder rates that then got turned into a genocide, okay? But let's go back to the White
House. Which are words spoken by their spokespeople. Their spokespeople on all their platforms is that there is a genocide against white people in this country.
Farm murders. It was a farm thing, right, where the murder rate is completely disproportionate. It is high.
We just had a conversation about statistics and the weird maths.
But what I'm saying is it's a high.
But now the weird maths is working in your favor.
No, wait. I'm talking about there are statistics on farm murders, right? So, and they are, have been particularly brutal and particularly newsworthy, and it makes for some very graphic discussion.
And right? Quite interesting when the work is done.
Yes.
Of following up on the motives and the perpetrators, it is also quite interesting that the motives and the perpetrators are not always black people.
Yeah.
And yet that part of the conversation is not being talked about. But I do want to hear about this. Well, girlfriends, husbands, wives, family members. This
right.
Is,
so then the president goes, he's in the White House. He says, we do not have a genocide against white people, which I agree with, right? Because the numbers don't bear it out. But he says, but we're killing everybody. That's really what the situation is. So, sorry, I get to walk out of here with my head held high because we just not prepared to get crime under control. In a way, quite proud of the fact that we've got a crazy crime statistic, right? That he seems to endorse by telling the president that we're not targeting anyone. We're just killing everybody, especially women. The woman, this poor woman from Kasatu gets up and says, oh, you think that's bad? You must see what you're doing to grannies in the township. And it becomes this festival of disgusting facts saying, ah, you know, this is really bad. It should be a point of shame to the country that anybody gets killed, you know? It's a point of shame. It's not a number crunching exercise. So it's a point of shame to me.
Mm.
So, you know, to me, once again, to try and find this AfriForum stalking horse problem and to even debate it isn't the issue. It's not going to help at all. Mm. You know, and then along comes Donald Trump, and that needs some discussion here. But the point is that let AfriForum do whatever they're going to do. And when they are lying, are we really going to say that the lie is the number of farmers killed? Is that really what you're going to say? When the president has said, and the commissions have said, we've got out of control crime. Surely that's the issue.
So what do you think the off-ramp for something, for a fire that is now completely out of control of AfriForum and Solidaritate that has become a distraction to the national agenda?
I don't think it's become a distraction. I think it's become, and I'm not in support at all. I've, to be fair, never had them on my show, and I have no real interest in having them on my show. I think it's put a spotlight on what we do so badly in South Africa. So it's, to my mind, I view it almost as a positive, not because I agree with them, but because it's time that all South Africans face up to the failings of our representatives, who we pay, right? Whether the numbers are slightly more on farms, whether it's whites, whether it's blacks, who cares? Well, I mean, not who cares? Who cares? That's not the point. The point is that this is not a point of pride. This is what is standing in the way of the development of this country, right? Mm. To defend it by saying, oh, they shouldn't have said farm murders. That's not the point. Yeah, it is like saying, if we go back to crime, well, you know, who cares that it's in Ekurhuleni? No, well, it doesn't. This is a crisis, and deal with it as such.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact of the matter is that what has happened over the last year, especially with the advent of Donald Trump, who I'm not a fan. I was on your show the last time. I got roundly lashed by everybody that says, not another person who doesn't like Donald Trump.
Not me.
No, not you. But I think it was a co-host of yours at the time and many of the comments. But the point is that I don't really mind. But the thing is that he picked this up. He picked up stompies, as we like to say in South Africa, ran with the farm murder thing, which I think that there's another factor at play, and we'll get on to that in a second. But the real issue is that it's time for South Africans to face up to our failings. Much like you and I have to do every day every time you examine your business or you examine this, you say, look, this is what we're doing right, but this is what we're doing wrong. And in South Africa, we have And I think that the AfriForum issue is being played by our government to try and distract from them not doing their work. Mm. It's their job to keep people safe. They have meant to have the monopoly on violence, the state, right? By definition, that's what they do. They meant to have... Well,
if we listen to what's come out of Malanga, they have no control over anything.
So it's their failing. This isn't AfriForum's fault that they have failed as a state.
No, absolutely.
As a government. So that's why I'm saying I'm half ambivalent to the AfriForum thing. I'm almost in support of the fact of somebody raising the alarm out there. Because then we go to something like the G20, which to me was one of my high points of the year.
Really?
Yes.
How so?
Because a big light was shone on the failings of South Africa and we deserve to get kicked out. For too long, we've surfed this Rainbow Nation stuff while not delivering. Mm. Right? It's time for South Africa to become a serious country or not. Mm. Right? And we are not going to be a serious... We've got to be very careful. Those nice messages sent by European leaders... Right. Oh, what a great event. Those guys, that's like me saying, hello, how are you? Do I really care how you are? I've just said hello. It's just become part of the end of the sentence, if you know what I mean. With these guys saying, oh, what a great thing. We really like you. What are they saying in private? Macron sent a message to say, what a wonderful G20. He went straight on his plane and said, you know what? We need to cut down the size of the G20.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm saying that we mustn't be fooled. And we have been fooled for 30 years by everybody smiling and being nice to South Africa while the country was taking every wrong turn. So we need to get very serious about it. And, you know, people like us, we need to start saying the AfriForum thing is not the issue. The issue is governance, right? We're not going to go and count bodies. I don't think that helps anybody. The problem is the government not governing. So I would be delighted for us to get kicked out of the G20. And for us to earn our way back in. When we got in, we were the 26th biggest economy in the world.
When we got in, because of Thabo Mbeki and Obasanjo, I always forget the third guy. There is a G20. They went to Japan to advocate for having a conversation, not without us.
Now we're the third biggest economy in Africa.
Well, numbers. If you ask the Nigerians on any day.
Okay. But... We're declining because everybody else on the continent is growing. We are not. So, you know, at what point do we have to get to 100 before we start facing up to our failings? Where do we get to before we actually start saying perhaps we should look in the mirror?
So, you know, you talk about the spotlight being shone on the failings. I think the biggest spotlight that was shone for me with G20 and the preparations and the month before, even though they had a year knowing it was coming here, is how quickly and easily various components of this government could gear up to create the set piece.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that I'm like, I hope going into the local elections next year, South Africans remember that when the world was coming here, these guys were able to get their act together to do something.
Yeah. And I called it, do you know about Potemkin villages? Right? And that well-known Russian sort of construct where it's not really a village, it's a facade of a village. And that's what we did, right? And
well, didn't Putin fly in snow to Sochi?
Yeah. And here we are. And all we know for sure is by the time the government election rolls around next year, the grass has grown again. You know, I did that thing where I actually drove from the Cape to
where?
From a wedding down in the winelands, and I drove back home. And it's visible. It's jarring to come back to what's meant to be the biggest city in Africa or whatever we like to call Johannesburg. And the street lights don't work. And the traffic lights don't work. And you don't see an official. And in Cape Town, I was trying desperately to see a street light that wasn't working and couldn't find one. And you go through the Huguenot Tunnel and every single one of the strip lights is working. There's a little tunnel down in the south of Johannesburg. It's probably about 100 meters long and about 20% of the lights work inside of it. And that thing's only about 15 years old. So you start saying to yourself, you know, it's manifestly different. Mm. But it's up to people in South Africa to start saying, we refuse to for you to distract us when we vote. The distraction, and that's why I've got a problem with the whole sort of AfriForum thing, only because it's such a distraction. Mm. Whether they're telling the truth, that who cares? Really, I honestly say, who cares? Where are they lying? Where are they lying about the government failures?
So what do you think South Africans at this moment in our democracy, as you know, we roll to the end of the year and most people spend the time kind of reflecting, how do you think South Africans should be seeing this moment in our democracy? Should they be more clear-eyed about what we have?
They should be a lot more selfish. South Africa, it's time for South African voters. Everybody is listening to us to be selfish. Vote in your own interest. Now, that's a double-edged sword, because I'll tell you where, if we look forward to the local government elections, where I'm very, very concerned. And that is the people that are voting selfishly are those people, for example, now we're talking at local government level. Right? I have my studios in Parkhurst. You can walk around the block and see three houses in northern suburbia that are connected to the streetlights for electricity. In other words, they're not paying for the electricity.
Really?
Right? Why would that person vote for the DA when they know that the DA will probably fix that? He's getting his electricity for free while the rest of us have to pay. So if you ask that person to vote in his self-interest, he's going to vote for Dada Marrero, because he knows that the guy's black.
Well, it's not going to be Dada Marrero. Well, it's going to be Loiso.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she was already pinged for corruption. So, you know, she's not about to fix it. So, yeah, it's we're getting perilously close to the desperately concerning words called failed state, where people who have got the money won't pay for services, where there's no repercussion for the action, where we don't answer the question, we answer it with another example. So, for example, we don't answer the AfriForum claims with a real action on murder. We answer it by saying, oh, no, they lied about one statistic. Mm. You know, understand what I mean? I'm saying that this is the thing that drives me mental, is that we continue to allow ourselves to be distracted. Mm. And it's just going to mean that the country will do the worst of everything. We're not going to have a revolution. We're just going to wither away. We're just going to go and become less and less of a force in the world. We'll get kicked out of the G20, and then we'll get kicked out of there, and we'll become a bit part player. Unless South Africans decide to face up to the truth, to not say, I'll use the 1917, the 2017, this is what's currently happening. The 2017 land audit is still the number that's being used for land ownership in South Africa. Mm. They're using that by saying in there, 71% of the commercial farms are owned by whites. Mm. So they say 71% of the land in South Africa is owned by farms. Now, that's of commercial farmers. That doesn't include any traditional land. That doesn't include any government-owned land. So you end up with this great headline, whites own 71% of the land, when it's not the reality, right? It's of that category. And it's eight-year-old data.
Mm. So back to what's said and what's heard.
Yes.
I, at the risk of going down a rabbit hole, am very fascinated about the houses in your block that are connected to the street lamps. What about the community around those people? So these people are your neighbors. Mm. And, you know, all the communities have WhatsApp groups that are very happy to say, you know, BM walking down the street, send cap, right? How, what kind of role do you see for a community forum in holding those people accountable? Because it's part of your direct world. Is it possible?
I think we're getting very, I think it should be done. I think we're getting very close to a tipping point, right? Very close to the tipping point where those very people that you are, let's say, calling out are also responsible for a whole lot of other things that the government should be doing that we are paying for already.
Mm.
We're paying for rates. We're paying for electricity. We're paying. We're paying for the Potemkin village. We're paying for all these commissions. And you get to the point where you say, listen, Pumi, if you are doing something and you are scoring X and you are not paying your fair share, good for you, girl. Right? We're getting perilously close. I think it's been like that already in the poorer areas. It's certainly like that, you know, and now it's just infecting upwards. And the government has to, at some point, stop. And, you know, yeah, you've got to say that the media's got to play a role because the argument isn't about AfriForum. By having that argument, they are throwing you off what you should be moaning about.
Mm.
What you should be investigating is the fact that they are just not doing their job, that people aren't safe. You're not safe in your house behind how many security things and a company that you can't say you're safe. Right, that you can't stop at a traffic light without being accosted by potential dangers or at least a beggar. You've paid to not live in that world. So, you know, we've got to get to the point where we don't allow ourselves to be distracted by these sideshows because they're throwing it's bread and circuses.
Mm.
There was a famous, you know, the Romans invented bread and circuses because it worked.
Gladiators, blood sports.
When people are getting angry, you give them a circus, you give them some bread. They say, wow, we went to the circus, we had a great time, and came home to all this bread, it's wonderful. No, it's not wonderful. It's a failure, and we've got to keep that light shining very brightly on the state that is not doing what they meant to be doing. And now that includes all those other parties that are in the GNU as well. And at local government level, we live in Johannesburg, we've got to shine a light on the ANC, the EFF, and the Patriotic Alliance for keeping this mess alive and understand what it is. And we can't sit back and say, AfriForum's lying about farm murders.
Mm. I think that's a fantastic place to end, that we have to keep shining the light and we have to be aware and not distracted. I love that. Not distracted by the bread and circus.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike Sham. Thank you for coming out this late in the year.
No, but I
think this is an important conversation that had to be had.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Next year we'll discuss Johannesburg and or the local government elections because, boy, that is going to be fun.
I'm ready for all the people to announce who their mayoral candidates are and then I will come on State of the Nation to pick it apart.
Fantastic.